Iowa's bottle bill was not an election year topic on the campaign trail, but it reaches more prominence during the coming Iowa legislative session. We dive into the issues surrounding Iowa's longtime bottle bill on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Iowa PBS is supported in part by Wells Fargo. Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Celebrating nearly 50 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa PBS. This is the Friday, January 1 edition of Iowa Press. Here is David Yepsen.
When Iowa passed its version of a bottle bill in 1978, Governor Robert Ray signed a perceived compromise between environmental groups, public park users, and private industry. Iowans paid an extra 5 cents per can or bottle of beverage to encourage recycling and make way for cleaner parks and roads that were once filled with trash. But in recent years, grocery stores have pushed back on the state mandate that they provide on-site can and bottle redemption. And during the COVID-19 epidemic in 2020, some grocers stopped the redemption practice altogether. So to gather more insight on Iowa's bottle bill controversies, we're joined by Michelle Hurd, president of the Iowa Grocery Industry Association, and Troy Willard, owner of the Can Shed Redemption Centers in the Cedar Rapids and Iowa City areas, and a member of the Iowa Recycling Association. Welcome to you both. Thanks for taking time to be with us to talk about this issue.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Also joining the conversation across the table is Kay Henderson, news director at Radio Iowa.
Michelle Hurd, I'll start with you. I've gone to the grocery store, I bought a six-pack, I paid 5 cents a can. What happens next? Just briefly.
So briefly, just starting at the very beginning, when retailers purchase products that are in the bottle deposit lot, they pay 5 cents to the distributor. The retailers then charge the consumer 5 cents, and then the consumer, when they redeem their product, either at the redemption center or grocery store, they receive their 5 cents back. And then the redemption center or the grocery store then will return the containers to the distributor while they receive the 5 cents and a 1 cent handling fee. So that's kind of how when you follow the nickel and the bottle deposit law.
Troy, how do you explain the bottle bill?
Essentially the same way. You know, it's a cycle where each participant in whether you're the manufacturer, distributor, retailer, consumer of that product is playing a role in making sure that, you know, this nickel is passing through the system, but the container as well is assuring that it's going to get recycled.
Okay. And we've tried to give a little overview of how it works, but I want you, starting with you, Troy Willard, describe what's wrong with the bottle bill and what should the legislature do about it?
Well, you mentioned it was passed in 1978, implemented in 1979. And things really with the bill have not changed over time. And obviously, there's whether you're looking at the costs associated with handling the containers, whether it's a retailer or a redemption center, the penny that they're reimbursed for that isn't enough to cover that. And we've seen issues with the types and brands of beverages that people are consuming. And the way the law was written originally didn't foresee the types of beverages we have. So there's a lot of beverages out there now that don't fall under the definition of a beverage container according to the law. That could be fixed.
And Michelle Hurd, same question to you. What's wrong with the bottle bill and what should the legislature do about it?
Well, I think, you know, we all have had a conversation about the bottle bill, many conversations over the years. And I think one thing that we all could recognize is that the bottle bill currently is not operating optimally. I share Troy's, I understand where he's coming from with the 1 cent handling fee. We operate our redemption portion on the same 1 cent handling fee and have for 40 years. In addition to that, you know, our industry has talked over the years about our safety and sanitation concerns. You know, operating a redemption center inside a grocery store where their primary concern is providing clean stores and providing consumer safe food is problematic. So I think that's one issue that we like to talk about. In addition, I think we also have a law that is not uniformly applied or enforced. There are several issues there that I'd love to talk about. One is dealer inequity. As Troy talked about what's changed over 40 years, in an increasingly competitive environment, we have more retailers that are looking to be in the food and beverage sales business. Mm. So, by example, 40 years ago, you might not have had dollar stores that sell beverages that are contained in the bottle deposit law, or maybe hardware stores. They're now directly across the street from your hometown grocer competing and not playing by the same rules or being held to the same standard. I think those are a couple of things we'd like to talk about.
Excuse me, what's the standard you want them to have?
All dealers, according to the law, need to redeem containers that they sell. And so if they sell them, they need to redeem them. I think you'd find often that there are folks in the dollar store format and hardware stores that, you know, consumers may not realize that, you know, they're not your grocery store, but they sell the beverage containers. They should also have to redeem.
Right.
Troy Willard, what is the preferred option if the legislature is going to tackle this issue and either redo or get rid of the bottle bill? What is the preferred option of your interest group?
As far as the place of return?
Correct.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the key elements to a successful bottle bill is the number of opportunities or points of redemption you have to return them. And, you know, all in the vein of consumer convenience. And, you know, the old adage is if you buy it, you should be able to, you know, take it back there. So I think everybody understands the sanitation concerns, and, you know, our business model is we want to make it more convenient than any place else to bring it to us. And so we think there is a role and certain ideas out there that are being implemented in other states that can keep the success rate up or make it better and make the retailers not be the focal point of those returns.
So walk us through what that would be.
I typically like to use Oregon as a model. 10 years ago, Oregon started a drop system, a depot system, where they worked in conjunction with the retailers and came up with brick-and-mortar places to be the focal point of the returns for people. And then they've also expanded those services into a network of drop sites where it didn't make sense to have brick-and-mortar locations, and they use technology. They're using the web. They're using apps. People are dropping off their containers at their convenience and then just waiting for the money to come back into their account, you know, in a few days after somebody has a chance to pick that stuff up and count it and give them credit for it. So I think that has a lot of potential.
Michelle Hurd, we're talking about crafting in this state a compromise between grocery store owners and people run redemption stores and consumers. And so there are a lot of moving political parts here, a lot of ideas that could go into that compromise. So we want to go through some of these ideas. The first one is, why not raise the deposit to a dime? If you, in 1978, 5 cents is today worth, inflation adjusted, for 17 cents. I've seen higher figures. So that's, but the bottle deposit has not kept track. So can you, what's wrong with raising the deposit to a dime?
I think one of the things that we've seen in some of the research we've conducted is that the last poll we took 3 or 4 years ago, a majority of Iowans did not support increasing the deposit to 10 cents. I think it's also important to point out that states such as Michigan that do have the 10 cents, while they do have the best redemption rate, Michigan's at the bottom as far as litter in their ditches. So I don't think that you always see the correlation between an increase to 10 cents and the actual impact it has on the overall performance in litter, with litter.
And Trevor, what do you think of rate of doubling the deposit?
You know, doubling the deposit certainly has an impact on the recovery rates. You know, Oregon, again, went through this exercise a few years ago when they went from a nickel to a dime, and they saw, you know, approximately a 20% increase in the return rates. You got to be careful, though, just because, you know, yes, we want to see the highest return rate possible, but, you know, there's... It's kind of like a Rubik's Cube. You start messing with things and it fixes it on one side and you look at the other and you've got another problem to deal with there. So
that's a good way to describe the political problem with this. What happens to the money that is not redeemed? I buy a can of pop and I don't take the can back.
Yeah.
What happens to that money?
So, you know, the distributors are the initiators of the deposit. So everything that they sell, they collect a nickel for. And if people don't return that to a store or to a redemption center to get their nickels back, they basically get to keep that as a, you know, I don't know, unintended windfall or
so that makes them a winner. That makes them, gives them a profit center. They don't want to. What do you think of that idea?
You know, I think that there's been a lot of conversations about the unclaimed deposit money. And I think that, you know, we have a highly complex system, and one that I think is part of has been an obstacle for moving forward with this issue. As Troy mentioned, you know, you have the Rubik's Cube and you start pulling one string and you have unintended, you know, consequences way down the line. I think there is money in the system that could be used to put towards the solution.
Kay wants to have a question about another piece of the cube.
Well, Mr. Willard, you mentioned that not every beverage container is currently part of the quote-unquote bottle bill. What would happen if, for instance, water bottles were included?
You'd see a huge jump in the number of containers we'd have to handle. I'm not sure exactly what year it happened, but here recently, bottled water has surpassed soda in the amount of sales. And, you know, when you look at a Mr. Pibb bottle and a Dasani bottle right next to each other, you're going, they're the same bottle. You know, why are we not handling them the same way?
So you'd be okay with expanding the list of items that would be covered?
Yeah. I wholeheartedly.
Would the grocery industry?
I think we'd have a couple of concerns. I think one thing I've read here recently has been the concern that some of the redemption centers have had with the volume here recently. And I would suspect that you might have the same problem if you increase your volume with water bottles. I think from our perspective, you know, redeeming them in the grocery store, expanding the containers would be very concerning for us just from the standpoint of space. A lot of times even, you know, some of our grocers have to rent facilities, have to rent places just to accommodate the materials that are currently included in the bottle deposit law. So I think if you expand that, I mean, I think from a space standpoint, it would be extremely problematic for grocery stores to accommodate that. And in addition, I think when you have, you know, 83% of Iowans have access to recycling, you're asking those folks to take those out of their bins, pay a 5-cent deposit, and take them back somewhere else for redemption. So I think, you know, some Iowans, I think, would have a hard time with losing the convenience of putting those in their curb.
Well, you brought up a question that's on our list. One option is to just get rid of the bottle bill and have people recycle. What do people who live in the middle of a 5-mile section and they're the only people who live there and they don't have a garbage truck who comes and collects their recyclables, what do they do?
I think that's one of the things that we worked on 4 years ago. You know, the bottle bill was enacted, as we've talked about, to address litter. And now we're trying to make it a recycling solution. So 4 years ago, we worked on a bill that would have eliminated the bottle deposit law. You wouldn't have paid your 5 cents. Consumers would have kept their 5 cents. And it would have helped fund access to recycling. And some of those communities right now, you know, not the 83% that currently have recycling, but focus on the areas that need more access. So we really, again, we're focused on trying to place the funds in the places we could that really need that additional access to recycling.
Don't grocers have some responsibility here to the community? I mean, you guys make money off of these products, particularly alcohol. And isn't part of selling that something that you ought to take some responsibility for cleaning up the trash?
You know, I think grocery stores are obviously an important part of all communities, and we do take our role and responsibility in all of this very seriously.
And why have you opposed this all this time?
You know, we over the years, we have continued to try to be a part of the solution. I think there is a misperception that the grocery industry is trying to purely just scrap the bill, when in fact we have not. Okay. We've worked on legislation to expand recycling to that, you know, it would have eliminated the bottle deposit law, but in the end would have expanded recycling options in Iowa. But also the last 2 years we did work on a bill, you know, if we're going to keep the bottle deposit law in place, we've supported a bill that would have increased funding to the redemption centers. We full-heartedly support an expansion and a broad network of redemption centers across the state of Iowa. Quite frankly, that helps our industry access some relief. So we have also supported bills and provided legislation that would help fund redemption centers as well.
I gather, Troy Willard, you'd be comfortable with a plan to expand the number of redemption centers. I mean, the compromise could easily be raise the deposit, expand the list of items, give the grocers what they want, what they've always wanted, get them out of being the garbage dump that they don't like to be, and then give your industry some of this additional money and fund redemption centers.
Yeah, there certainly needs to be more money in the system to make it a viable financial model. And it all goes back to, again, the convenience for a consumer to do that. And a lot of factors that go into that are, you know, the population base, the number of containers that they're drinking, if it's an expanded bill or the bill as it currently sits. And, you know, you got to have the participation. Raising the deposit encourages participation, but you also need to make sure you're increasing the handling fee as well, because that's the only way that redemption centers are going to make it.
Well, tell us how many redemption centers there are today compared to 20 years ago.
Oh, it's far, far less. Right. There's never been a really good, solid number to go to. The DNR website, a lot of times the number that they list, a lot of times are already out of business by the time that's hitting the website. You know, it's certainly under 100. We've seen more of a decline here lately. It used to be in the past that, you know, somebody would try it, replace somebody that went out of business, but now we're just finding that there's these deserts out there because people can see that it's not a smart thing to get into right now.
And is it a desert because of population density?
You know, that's part of it. Again, a good economic model in there would bring back some of these places. And a lot of times it's going to be, you know, a local small business entrepreneur, somebody that's doing it, or somebody that's doing it for some type of charitable work in the community or something like that.
The governor is trying to find more money for water quality and environmental protection projects. Would the grocery industry be open to using some of this deposit fee for something other than actual processing of the cans and directing it toward environmental programs?
We did support part of, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about the piece of legislation that we worked on. I believe it was 4 years ago. It did keep that 1 cent handling fee in place and did actually go to help fund programs like you're talking about, whether it's expanding recycling, incentivizing making progress on the diversion rate and all those environmental programs. We would support that. We supported that then. And I think that we would be interested in looking at legislation that would address that as well.
Mr. Willard, my friend Lee Rood at the Des Moines Register had an excellent series here recently about this bill. And in there, she reported some are talking about setting up a redemption center for every 25,000 people, which would give you about 10 of them in the Des Moines area. Mm-hmm. But as Kay said, there are some areas where there are not very many people. Is that a good metric for us to use? Let's set up a one redemption center for every 25,000 Iowans.
You know, I know some of the systems they've put in place recently in Australia, they've shot for one for every 12,000 people. You know, I think it...
You know what it is in Oregon?
I don't know that they quantify it that way. You know, each individual state or country or province is doing this stuff. They kind of cater it to what their needs are.
What about how many redemption centers would we need?
You know, I think currently, if you look at, we've talked a lot about access. I think, you know, and I talked about the lack of enforcement of our law right now. Currently, according to the Iowa law, they're supposed to be, the beer wholesalers are supposed to provide a recycling facility in every county seat in the state of Iowa. I'm not sure that that's happening right now.
What do we have to do to enforce that? I see Fairway says we're not taking any more cans back. It's a misdemeanor penalty. How do we get corporations to obey the law?
I think there are a number of different ways in which the law is not being enforced right now. I talked a little bit about the dealer inequity. There are dealers out there that have never redeemed cans and bottles. You also have, I mentioned, you know, that the beer wholesalers need to have a recycling facility in each county seat. The convenience standard, which is the distance in which a retailer needs to be from a redemption center in order to utilize and get the relief from a redemption center, that's never been properly defined.
What do you think?
Well, yeah, there's a lot there. So specifically to the requirement for a beer wholesaler per every 25,000 people. Actually, the way that statute or that part of the statute reads, that's supposed to be for smash containers that aren't eligible to be redeemed. So basically, when a container comes to us, it's supposed to be, you know, intact. It's supposed to be able to stand on its own. It's supposed to be able to hold liquid. It's supposed to be able to read the embossing on it that says it's deposit eligible. So that section is just basically saying, hey, if you got a smash can, if it's roadkill, if somebody's mishandled it, you know, we want to make sure these get recycled, and they should go back to the beer wholesalers. So it's really not the beer wholesalers' responsibility to have a redemption center in each site for people to bring any type of nickels and containers back to.
One of the societal benefits that occurs, and it was one of Bob Ray's arguments for doing this, I remember him talking about, people don't just go out and pick up the can, they also pick up the cigarette pack and the paper, you know, the potato chip bag, and it cleans up Iowa's roadway. And boy, if you ever drive through Illinois, you can sure see the difference in the ditches and roadways there. So, Treywater, what about that argument for strengthening and expanding the bottle bill, that it has that ancillary benefit that Bob Ray saw?
Yeah, that certainly is. You know, if you're going to compare studies on litter, you got to make sure you're comparing apples to apples. You know, some studies, they're looking at, you know, walking the roadways, and it's a 300-foot zone that they're doing their piece counts on. Some other places, it's only a 15-foot zone. So you got to make sure that when you're looking at the data, that you're comparing apples to apples. You know, I think it stands to reason that the people that are going and doing the walks and picking the stuff up on the roadside certainly have maybe just a different mindset morally about whether or not litter and picking up stuff is something that they should be doing. So they're doing the right thing. So,
Michelle Hurd, I'm not going to ask you to place a bet here, but do you think this issue will be resolved in the courts? Or do you think it will be resolved by legislators, lawmakers?
You know, I think we've tried for many, many years to take it up at the Capitol and to find a compromise. And we will continue in our industry. And you know, there are more than just Troy and I and the redemption centers involved in this issue. And I think you can see by the people that are here continuing to have the conversation, we continue to want to work towards a legislative solution. However, if we can't reach that, we do have some administrative actions currently taking place where we are looking to try to have the law uniformly applied and enforce some of the topics that I talked about with the dealer inequity, the convenience standard not being properly defined. So,
well, you mentioned enforcement is difficult. Forget the misdemeanor. Government has a way of imposing sanctions on all kinds of behavior. Why don't we say a grocery store that doesn't want to take cans back, we're going to jerk your liquor license?
And
you know, how about that'll get their attention?
I think that, you know, there have been a number of dealers who have not been participating in this law for many, many, many years. And I think whatever they look to do, it needs to be enforced equally amongst all.
Trevor Willard, how about a civil fine? Fine the corporation for not redeeming.
Yeah, there certainly doesn't seem to be much teeth in the way that it's set up now, and there's much more important things that county attorneys and local law enforcement people need to be working with. So I think the, you know, how they go about enforcing any of the issues that any of the parties have in it could be better handled.
Would it be helpful to have a federal bottle bill? There's some discussion, tiny bit about that. so that you, particularly in border communities, you get rid of the discussion, hey, did they buy this in Burlington or did they buy this over in Illinois?
You bring up a good point. I mean, we certainly do see issues in the border where there's, you know, a competitive disadvantage from a pricing standpoint, and there's also fraud that happens at the border. People that live or operate businesses on the border community are at a price disadvantage. The product certainly costs more because of the cost of the system, in addition to the consumers having to pay the 5-cent deposit here that they don't across the border. You also have folks that buy a product, don't pay the deposit, and come here in Iowa to claim the deposit. So I think that, you know, as far as the conversation about that would eliminate any competitive disadvantage at the border. But I think that there are states that feel like they're doing a good job. I mean, one example would be, I believe it's Washington. It currently has, you know, number one in litter prevention, and they don't have a bottle deposit law. So would they want to have the costs associated with a bottle law when they're currently already performing well?
And I have to interrupt you. We're out of time. Okay. Thank you. Thank you both for being here. Appreciate it.
Holy cow, you're right.
Yeah, it did fly.
And we'll be back next week with another edition of Iowa Press at our regular times, 7:30 Friday night, and again at noon on Sunday. So for all of us here at Iowa PBS, I'm David Yepsen, and thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Iowa PBS is supported in part by Wells Fargo. Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.